Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges the VCs have. As well as there's much more money, the universal thing still applies that they need to see a good business model, a good technology, and a good management team. I think what's really striking is that there's no single sort of path to becoming a successful entrepreneur. People have come from all kinds of backgrounds. Some have spun out from university, some have PhDs, some have been, you know, in working in large corporations and then suddenly feel that they have a new idea or technology. So I think that's been fascinating in terms of how they became an entrepreneur in the first place.
That was from the middle of this week's episode. So what does it take to build a successful clean tech business? And what defines a successful entrepreneur? Stay tuned for the full conversation. Hello and a warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. It feels good to have you tune into the show today and hope you're doing well. This podcast is your one destination for all the big stories related to the global net zero transition. Well, for the last few weeks, I've been asking this question, a question that I ask myself from time to time, you know, just to stay relevant. So how does this podcast differentiate from the rest in the space? Well, the key point is that right from the start, I've kept it a little open, covering all topics on the contours of sustainability and net zero transition. I haven't been very specific about a technology, a solution, or a certain aspect like policy or investment trends or anything like that. The point is to give you, the listeners, all the interesting stories that I think you should be knowing and you would like to know around this global transition. And most importantly, I learn new stuff along with you. Every chat with the guest is an experience in itself. And speaking of which, I have to lead you to this feature segment with our guest, who's an expert when it comes to identifying leaders and experts in the clean tech space. So, who is our guest for today, and what is his mission in the space?
Hello, I'm David Hunt, CEO and founder of Hyperion Executive Search, a search firm that specializes in the clean tech sector, a sector I've been involved with since 2007. I'm also the host of the Leaders in Clean Tech podcast, where so far I've interviewed over 80 CEOs and founders and entrepreneurs within the sector. I mentor for accelerators like Plug and Play and Foresight. And for me, the mission is to drive clean tech and to solve the climate crisis that we all face.
Yes, I've been following your work for quite some time. And you talk to a lot of leaders in clean tech. And your specialization is identifying leadership in clean tech industry. But how did you get here? I'm sure when you started off, clean tech wasn't mainstream as it is now. So what's your journey been like so far?
Yeah, no, absolutely. As you say, it's evolved significantly over a relatively short period of time. But I spent most of my career as a headhunter or in an executive search for leadership roles in a variety of technical industries, from telecoms to IT to HVAC and building services for many years. And just by coincidence, back in 2007, I was approached by a friend of a friend who was looking at maybe setting up a solar business back at that time.
Okay.
And in truth, I'd had a little bit of too much time in hotels and in airports and figured that, hey, this would be interesting. So I did some research into solar. I knew nothing about it at that time. Saw a lot of what was happening across the world, in particular in Germany with the Energiewende there.
Mm-hmm.
And was amazed at just how sustainable you could be, even at that time, although, of course, it was much more expensive at that time. So I actually set up a solar business in the UK, an EPC business. So we installed solar for both residential and commercial businesses. And I built that business myself from the two of us to about 50 people over a relatively short period of time. And just loved the whole concept of being able to generate your own energy and be self-sufficient and to stop damaging the world. As we all, even back then, of course, we knew the damage that fossil fuels were doing. But after about 8 years, I kind of still had the yearning back to leadership and people, which was always my main drive and always my main love. So I created Hyperion Executive Search in 2014.
Okay.
To help to find leadership and talents for the nascent clean technology sector. And that's what we've been doing initially a lot in solar, and now right the way across the clean technology spectrum of renewable technologies, the mobility transition, the energy storage and grid transitions. And yeah, it's just a really fascinating and wonderful place to be able to do your work.
Well, I like this idea of where you come around like a full circle and come back to where you actually started in terms of identifying leadership potential, but in a different sector.
Yeah.
And 2014, as you rightly said, is kind of was when the sector was really starting to pick up. It was just at the tip of the rise of exponential curve. Now, having seen that transition right from early 2010s, so what's your opinion like how the new leadership has come about in clean tech? I'm sure there has been a difference in how the leadership started in 2014 to now in 2020s. So what's your experience been like?
Yeah, I think absolutely it's right. I mean, the founders and people that were in the sector back in 2014 and earlier, it was still most of the battle was even to convince your friends and family that what you were doing was sensible.
Fair.
And let alone VCs and future employees. So of course that was then. It was very much difficult to get recognized as having a valid business model, and that there was a sector and there was growth potential. In many ways, particularly after the first sort of clean tech VC bubble bursting in around the 2000s. But as that's evolved and changed, clearly now we're in a situation where everybody understands the climate challenges and that we have to do something about this. We have to stop burning stuff, for starters, and that the technologies that all fit under the clean technology banner are those which will contribute to helping that to happen. So I think there's now a real interest in people who want to work in the sector. Of course, there's much more money coming into the sector from VCs and private equity. So there are still many, many challenges, but I think they've certainly changed from almost not being heard or even being laughed at 10, 15 years ago to now having a huge demand, which makes it difficult to find talent across all levels because the demand is very, very high. And the people who have experience in the sector, it's a very small pool of people.
Exactly. Two of your points is kind of resonates with me. Even when I started in that time, 2011, people thought of solar as something that you put on rooftops for water heating in India.
Yeah.
Because solar water heaters were quite prominent even then. But then to tell people, no, I was building large solar power plants, it took a lot of convincing and a lot of discussions to kind of convince that large power plants were being built. But now it's mainstream.
Yeah.
And the other idea that you mentioned, a lot of money is coming into the table and a lot of VCs are investing in new companies. So how has this been since a lot of VCs and a lot of investment is coming into the space and you said identifying talent is tough? How does this come together? VCs betting their money on idea and leaders who are building that idea. I'm sure you also deal with young startups and young leaders. So how does that match happen?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the thing with VCs, of course, the ones who are sector specific clearly are looking for companies who are making an impact. But one of the things that's universal for VCs, they don't just back the technology, they back the leadership team or they back the founding team. And if the founding team or the management team isn't strong enough, then they're less inclined to invest. Or at least they would be wanting to address that situation to follow on from their investment. So we actually work with quite a number of clean tech VCs who ask us to engage with them after their investment to help bring additional leadership talents or even sometimes replace the existing leadership talent within a business.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that's one of the challenges the VCs have. As well as there's much more money, the universal thing still applies that they need to see a good business model, a good technology, and a good management team.
That's interesting to know that people also bring you to the table to kind of replace the leadership. Because startups and entrepreneurs have their own kind of vision and statements, and it must be really tough for you to get involved at a time when you have to replace the founding team. What's that typically like?
Yeah, no, it is, and it's an interesting process actually, Jirish. I think, as you say, when founders start a business, often their vision is to be the next Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, and that's a great vision to have in many ways. But it's tough. A startup world is very tough. And as soon as you accept money from a VC or from external forces, then you're accountable and you're answerable to other people. Fortunately, more often than not, when we're involved in such situations, the founder concerned is often aware of the limitations and is supportive of the transition. So it's not uncommon for a CEO who has been the inventor, if you like, of the technology or the solution, is quite happy to step into a CTO role and welcome in a new CEO to lead the business from a commercial point of view. So that's not uncommon. Unfortunately, though, sometimes it is less well received.
Mm-hmm.
And we have certainly worked in situations where there's been the investor that has insisted on a transition or a change of leadership at the helm. But quite often, founders do recognize, as I say, they do recognize their own limitations, and that, you know, it's very difficult to be all things to all men. And sometimes your skill set isn't perfect for the startup phase, but is not necessarily the right personality or the right skill set for the scale up phase. So that's when quite often a transition changes in the leadership table. Sometimes it's a replacement, but sometimes it's just additional people to bring additional skills to the company.
Well said. Scale and being the next Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos is something that leads me to my next question on this. Because if we take Jeff Bezos, the time when he started Amazon, he was at the right place at the right time. And then the boom happened. And that was with most of the companies in information technology and allied businesses around cloud services and things like that, the app ecosystem and everything boomed after that. But cleantech is not yet there in that position. Or the way I see it is the scale factor is not going to be the same as in IT. And how do VCs kind of value this in the cleantech space? How do they value that? Okay, we are not going to have the same scale factor in this because there is still a lot of R&D that's happening in this sector.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, actually. I think there certainly is massive and exponential growth in many areas. Of course, we've seen it in solar, as we already touched on, in how that has evolved in the time that we've been involved in that space. But I do get your point. I think that the difference between some of the previous booms, IT being one, of course, and then telecoms, of course, went through a massive exponential change and disruption in the late 1990s, early 2000s. They were quite singular or siloed in terms of the technology and the growth. I think with cleantech, it's quite a big umbrella for a number of different technologies, and there's so much convergence going on. We have all these things happening at the same time. We have the growth of solar and the reduction of costs in solar. We have batteries who are evolving significantly in terms of improved energy density and reduced cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's enabled the electric mobility world and the electric vehicle transition to happen. And in some parts of, certainly in Europe, that's happening at a massive pace. So sometimes it's quite difficult to see where the hotspots are. And of course, there are some froth, shall we say, or hype in certain areas of technology. But it's that convergence thing that I think is perhaps sometimes difficult to navigate because so many things are happening at once and they all do interact. And that's why I think it's a little bit different from specifically the IT or the telecoms disruptions, as an example.
That's fair. Now, the other thing that you do in addition to being an executive search person, executive search professional, you also host a popular podcast. And in this, you interview leaders. I mean, that is how I kind of got in touch with you because I was listening to a few of your episodes. And So I wanted to ask you this question. When you talk to leaders, and I'm sure in all the conversations that you had, most of the conversations are with leaders who have come from startups. So from your discussions with them, how did you kind of see how the genesis of idea took place and how did they kind of pivot and kind of scale that up in this space?
Yeah, I think I consider it a privilege that both through my day job with Hyperion and through the podcast, I get to speak to some fascinating leaders and founders of businesses within the sector from across the world, in particular Europe and the US, but also from elsewhere. And I think what's really striking is that there's no single sort of path to becoming a successful entrepreneur. People have come from all kinds of backgrounds. Some have spun out from university. Some have PhDs. Some have been, you know, in working in large corporations and then suddenly feel that they have a new idea or technology. So I think that's been fascinating in terms of how they became an entrepreneur in the first place. And the stories behind that are fascinating. But once you become an entrepreneur, I think a lot of the things that you face are fairly universal, and it's how you adapt to that. And going back to my point about the skill sets to do that. And I think What surprises most, or what are the biggest challenges? Typically, it's around funding and people. I mean, those are the two areas, I think, from a startup perspective or from any company to scale. If you have money behind you and you have the right people, then you've got a fighting chance of success. But if one of those is missing, then clearly it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think those are the two challenges that leaders face, is the amount of fundraising that's often required to be done, and the amount of, or the difficulty in finding the talents to enable you to fulfill your ambitions and to fulfill your plan. And that comes up time and time again. In fact, a couple of the founders, one in particular, Christoph Ostermann from a company called Zonon, who exited to, I think it was unofficial, but I think it was about £500 million exit to Shell. They were a residential energy storage battery company. They were about 30 people when we started working with them. But as a CEO, he said, ultimately, I created this company to achieve this mission. And I think he did to a large extent, but he actually spent, as a CEO, 70% of his time fundraising, which meant, that left a little bit of time for operations, for commercial activities, for building the team and for other factors. So he found that a real challenge, to have to spend so much time continually looking for additional funds. But that's not a lone story. Lots of people find that they have to spend so much time either looking for money or looking for people. And that's not necessarily the vision they had when they started the company.
That's well said. Sonen is a good story, and glad that you mentioned this, because Sonen, as we know, kind of, when they sold out to Shell, it was a big acquisition by Shell at that point, because they were just transitioning to the new energy team. And Now, interestingly, as we speak, and as you mentioned about identifying the problems, idea being one good thing that startup founders have in their mind, but funding and people is something that they get as they move along. In this time, in this post-pandemic world, how has this transition been in the clean tech space? I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs or a lot of people with ideas are reaching out to a wider network. Mm-hmm. I still see there's a lot of activity happening around the world, people bouncing ideas with people around the world and seeing that, okay, this could be possible because most of it is remote, or we could do on and off and things like that. Do you see a change post this?
Yeah, I think the pandemic's, of course, on a personal level, it's been very difficult for everybody and tragic for some. But I think there have been some positives in terms of, from a talent perspective, being able to look at people working remotely. And from the fact that we're just so much more now used to engaging over platforms like Zoom or Teams or other such platforms, where your location is less important, and you can access information, you can access and have conversations and meetings with VCs that you might not otherwise have had. And I think it's certainly been a good platform to enable greater levels of collaboration. I think one thing that's been really interesting, Yuresh, in the last few years has been the increase of incubators and accelerators and such programs that encourage and nurture startups and enable them to meet the right VCs, to meet the right strategic partners, and to create an environment where there's a lot of support. I mentor for a couple of VC accelerators like Plug and Play and Foresight Canada and some others. And I think that's a really positive thing. And I think it's really been enabled, to come back to your original point, knowing that some of the cohort now, you don't have to relocate to Silicon Valley or to Amsterdam or wherever the cohort or wherever the accelerator is based. So much now is being done online. And I think it does give people a much broader access to mentors, to VCs, to funding, to support, and to their peers, to other founders who are in similar situations.
Well, your point actually resonates with another point that I heard on probably a podcast. Again, I think it was from another accelerator program. And that was the same thing that he also echoed, the founder echoed, that post-pandemic, he has been very busy in compared to normal times, because in normal times, it was structured. You have meetings in one place and you have ideas coming there. But now in this time, people are just reaching out to him at like random hours.
Yeah.
And he's getting a lot of good ideas and they're actually doing well. So, well, that's a valid point. Now, David, as a executive leader, search professional, what is, in your view, are modern leaders, are they looking at, because we spoke about people coming from different parts of the world, they are not just focused on, let's go to Silicon Valley, let's get our idea incubated there. They are looking at it, doing it from different parts of the world. So the new age leaders in clean tech, is the global market their choice right from the word go? Or are they still thinking being focused on being a niche player, niche geography player?
Yeah, again, it's an interesting point. I think broadly, we accept and know that the challenges are global, and therefore the solutions need to be global. And ultimately, I think most businesses do see internationalization as important. And that's good and bad. I mean, we're living in a time now, picking up on the point of post-pandemic, where it's easier to, even though we can't actually travel as much as we could before, we in principle can engage with people globally much more easily. But as a startup, sometimes the temptation to move to a bigger market can be a distraction and can stretch your resources too thinly, both as a company and as a leader. And so it's about timing, but I think certainly everybody sees this as a global problem. You know, the drive to Mission Zero, as you well know, is a global one, and I think people see solutions need to be global, and I think founders see themselves as global entities mostly. I don't think I know of too many companies who've set up to always be a local or a single country player. But of course, then it's the timing, the resources, the people, the money that enable that growth to happen. But I certainly think it's a global problem, and most entrepreneurs see themselves as providing a solution beyond their own borders.
True, it's a global problem. And the very fact that we are collaborating on this is, again, because it's a global issue and people are just curious to listen to conversations around this. And it's definitely emerging to be a good one. Now, you did mention about funding. People are very important in addition to having ideas. What, in your opinion, should leaders have when they are incubating or starting to grow their business in addition to this, people, funding, and ideas? What do you think are something that they miss?
I think sometimes it's tempting to fall in love with the technology or the solution that you've invented and to be so focused on its capabilities in your mind that you don't necessarily think of whether the problem is big enough to have a successful business. So what I would say is always to look at the market fit. You know, what's the addressable market for the technology or solution that you want to bring to the marketplace? Is that timing's critically important, as we touched on before. You know, a lot of this is about being in the right time in the right place. But also sometimes it's okay to have a fantastic technology, but does it solve a big enough problem for enough people to enable to attract the investment and the scale to make it a success? So I think that sometimes, as I say, I've seen people who have been that focused on the technology, they forget to look at the addressable market and whether it actually solves a big enough problem.
Well, in that case, a product market fit of the good old time still stands very relevant at this time, even though we say the market is global and the challenge is evolving. So still the product market fit has to be as crucial as it was a couple of decades back as well, right?
100%. Absolutely. And that's certainly the VCs and the funders will look exactly at that. What's the product market fit? Where's traction? And quite often, of course, there is some limited funds pre-seed and while companies are still in the idea stage, but primarily the money comes once there's some traction. And traction only comes once there's at least some sign of a product market fit.
David, now, if I were to put you on the spot as someone who identifies people who have leadership potential, what is that one thing that out of the large set of people that you have interviewed or you continue to interview for leadership positions, what is the one thing that you look for in leaders in the clean tech space, in addition to kind of being passionate about an idea or having the right connections to the right people?
Yeah, again, a good question. I think there's one thing which has changed and become much, much more important than it ever has. You've, of course, got the standards of the abilities to be resilient, the abilities to look at product market fit, the ability to engage and build people. But I think increasingly founders and CEOs need to be visionaries and they need to express that vision and they need to be able to communicate. And certainly the ability to communicate on a number of different levels and to a number of different audiences is critically important. For example, from commercial purposes, then it's important to be able to engage in things like podcasts or social media or to be visible in the world and to be a thought leader. I think increasingly that's important for leadership, to the ability to be seen as someone with credibility. And then, of course, within your communication, you've got to be able to continue on a daily basis, share the vision and the mission of the company with your employees at all levels, whether that's your co-founders, whether that's your senior management team, or whether that's the juniors and the new people that come into the business. So I certainly think the ability to communicate is increasingly important. And again, going back to the point now, we don't have, certainly haven't had for the last couple of years, and in a hybrid future, we may not have as many face-to-face contacts as we were used to having. So the ability to communicate without that face-to-face contact, whether that's on Zoom or the telephone or however you do that, I think that's really what I look for and my clients look for now is one of the factors among many is the ability to really share a vision with passion and authenticity to a variety of different audiences.
I mean, that's a very good point, and I like particularly like the way you put it, and you kind of gave clear reasons on why communication is very key at this point and also going forward in the post-pandemic world, if I were to call it that way.
Mm-hmm.
David, on a final note, and just that as we conclude on communication part, what would your thought or your suggestion be to people who are starting up, starting with some ideas in the space? And since every emerging technology has a bunch of people who come up with saying, I have this idea, I want to get to the next level, what do I do?
Yeah.
So what would your recommendation be to aspiring leaders who want to make an impact in this space?
I think you've got to have an element of trust and the ability to network. You know, sometimes you think your idea is entirely unique, and perhaps it is. But if you keep it to yourself, nothing will ever happen. So I think the ability to trust others, I mean, not recklessly, of course, if you have IP, you have to protect that. But the ability to trust others and to reach out and network with others within the sector, you know, potential peers to learn from them, potential VCs, accelerators. I think that's really the key thing is to share your vision, your passion, your mission and ideas and to see how they stick. You know, if you're finding that you are a lone voice in a long period of time, I wouldn't necessarily say stop, but it does make you question where you are. So whether it's as a founder and a leader or an entrepreneur looking to start a business, or whether it's as somebody who's looking to transition their career into the clean tech sector, I think the key thing is to network and to reach out and to engage, whether that's again, hopefully we'll get to more face-to-face conferences and trade shows in the future. But of course, there are, as we know, there's a lot of online platforms where you can start to engage and share with other people. So I think that's one of the key things I would say is to network and to share your ideas and to listen and learn from others.
Well, that's a very good point. Very good point. And it's a good takeaway for all the listeners, all aspiring leaders, to kind of be open to sharing your ideas with a selective few. And that few has to be identified. It doesn't come just like that. It has to be built over a period. And that's why platforms, social platforms, as you say, play a valuable part. And it's a valid point for all the aspiring leaders to take away from this. So, David, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I personally should say that I learned a lot in this last few minutes I had this conversation with you. And I continue to learn on your podcast. So thanks for taking time to join me on the show today.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. I look forward to hearing more of your episodes. And it's been great to have the conversation. And hopefully, yeah, people can take something from it. And it's important we all have this shared mission. And going back to my final point, we're all collaborating to try and achieve a mutual gain and aim. And we only do that by sharing. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's a wrap on our feature segment. Hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did recording it with David. I'm sure with the insights he shared from the behind-the-scenes action in the startup space, we can really appreciate the work the founders do in getting their idea off the ground. The first golden rule, be it in any sector, an idea needs to be balanced with a good leadership team and good business models to take it to global markets and realize the potential. Second, there is no single path to become a clean tech entrepreneur and a business leader. But the challenges in raising capital and building a team is universal. And finally, successful founders and CEOs tend to be visionaries with a clear idea and the ability to communicate it with a wider audience. These were my three top takeaways from the conversation. For more such insights from David, the best place is to follow his podcast, Leaders in Clean Tech. And also, you can follow David on LinkedIn. The links will be in the show notes section of the podcast and also on the website missionshunya.com. As always, if you like the episode, do write a review on Apple Podcast or on any platform that you listen to this. You can also help spread the word by sharing the episode link to people in your network. So with that, it's a wrap on this episode. This is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.